And welcome you into another edition of Gateway to Baseball Heaven. I'm your host, Daniel Shopdahl, C70 at the Bat, at C70 on Twitter. And with me, as always, is Tara Wellman from Birds on the Black and at Tara Wellman on Twitter. And if you haven't, again, if you haven't subscribed to Tara's YouTube channel, you should do that because... did you get to... Are you at 400?
Is that... We did. We crossed 400 this
Excellent.
Weekend.
Excellent. So now she's working toward 5. You should be part of that. So,
so go what all the cool kids are doing. So
at least 400 of them. So, you know, maybe a few more will join the fray. We hope you've had a glorious Easter, and the Cardinals did. They won a game against the Mets, took the series, beat Noah Syndergaard. You know, I was recording my other podcast, Meet Me at Mutual, on Friday night, and we were watching the Cardinals lose to Jason Vargas, the man who couldn't get anybody out until he came to St. Louis, and you started to feel like, you know, you missed your opportunity. But with DeGrom, Jacob DeGrom hurt, and then they beat up on Noah Syndergaard, optimism returns to this team, taking 2 out of 3 after losing 2 out of 3 to the Brewers.
You know, it's funny. I sort of jokingly was discussing with someone before the series that naturally the Cardinals would get beat up by Jason Vargas, and then they would probably do the beating up against DeGrom and Syndergaard. Of course, at the time, DeGrom was still scheduled to pitch in the second game of the series. While that's not exactly what happened because they did not face DeGrom, they did still pull off the unlikely feat that was presented there. So, yeah, it's weird. And I don't know that I can really justify the struggles the Cardinals have with the soft tossing lefty. And it feels like that should be a thing that someone, anyone on that staff could figure out. But it's a perpetual problem for this team. So it wasn't really surprising to see that as an issue. It was surprising to see Jason Vargas do as well as he did considering the start he's had to the season. So a little bit frustrating in that regard, definitely some missed opportunities, and it's those missed opportunities that can come back to haunt you. Fortunately, the Cardinals did come back and win the second and third game of the series, but man, just some huge missed chances in that first game.
Yeah, and I mean, you're right. I kind of thought going into this that, you know, this would... I actually was talking to Alan on a direct message, and we were saying this is the kind of game the Cardinals lose, the Vargas game, you know, yeah. Over yep. the past. And you said you would like to think that with a new managerial staff, things would be different, and unfortunately they were not. But fortunately it didn't seem to matter, at least in the long run, because again, you can't win them all. You just want to win the series, and the Cardinals did that. They just took the long and hard road to doing that by taking it out on the God of Thunder. You know, maybe this is a Avengers Endgame spoiler.
I was going to say, appropriately.
Yeah,
appropriately timed.
That's right. And people doing the damage are, well, not necessarily the people that you would expect. At least if you're listening to the show, you know, this time last year. Marcelo Zuna, you've got Dexter Fowler, you've got Jose Martinez, you've got, you know, it feels like this outfield, which is almost completely different, at least in configuration, to what we thought we were going to see this year, and probably not the one that anybody would have put together, is doing a lot of damage right now, and it's kind of remarkable to see that even with Harrison Bader and Tyler O'Neill, the guys that we kind of thought we would be leaning on, being out has seemed to open up this new configuration, and it's working real well.
Yeah, you know, it's been interesting watching... let's start with Jose Martinez, because it's always interesting watching
him.
Well,
sure.
But it's been interesting watching him in the limited opportunities that he's had. And, you know, he's such a great teammate that you never get the feeling that he's frustrated by the lack of opportunities, but you also always get the feeling that that dude's ready to play. Anytime you call his name, he's going to be there and he's going to give it his all. And I think that's what makes it so easy to appreciate him, is that you know that you're getting the very best that Jose Martinez has to offer that day. every time he picks up a bat. And he's a little clumsy in the outfield, and sometimes you just have to laugh because you can't quite figure out what he's doing in right field. But man, when he steps up to the plate, you also know that every single at bat he has the potential to change the game. And in many cases, when he's gotten the opportunity to start, that's exactly what he's done. He's really taken over the driving in of runs and creating those run scoring opportunities. So it's been exciting to see that from him. I think the transformation of both Marcell Ozuna and Dexter Fowler is really great at this point in the season, because there was so much pressure on both of them to not just live up to expectations, but to kind of rewrite the expectations that they created for themselves with difficult seasons last year. So for both Marcell Ozuna and Dexter Fowler, they look so much more comfortable. They look so much more, I don't know, just in a zone that we rarely, if ever, saw them get to last season. With Dex, of course, there's this ongoing story now that he credits all of this success to his new taste for coffee, thanks to his wife Aaliyah and Matt Carpenter, potentially to Jose Martinez if he gets on the Primos Cafecito branding train as it's pulling away from the station. I don't know where I'm going with that. I was trying to do the train thing, didn't. Anyway,
yeah.
he's on the coffee kick, and you know, if it's working for him, I say stick with it. But I also just think there's been a really consistent, really controlled approach to his entire game since he came back from the foot injury. Plus, he's had the support and the consistency of the team and the organization around him. And I know that we kind of scoff at that sometimes, and we even a week ago were saying, how long can you run Dexter Fowler out there with Jose Martinez and Tyler O'Neill on your bench? Well, this is why what Mike Schilt has done has the potential to be so effective, both with Fowler and with Ozuna. They know that they're the guy, and they're going to have every opportunity to be successful. And in both cases, they've been successful with the opportunities that they've been given.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Dexter Fowler still doesn't have his OPS plus isn't quite 100, but it's real close. It's at 95. Has an OPS of 716, but you look at where he was this time last year, you know, he's gained 100 points of OPS. You know, he was hitting 181 right about this time last year. You know, I'm not going to give him all the credit. Doesn't go to coffee because, well, it just can't all be coffee. But I mean,
only 10%, right? Isn't that what Matt Carpenter told him? 10% better concentration,
something like that. I mean, you know, who knows what it is? But you know, I think we've seen all year long a better results. I mean, the results are obviously remarkable over the last 10 days or so. But you know, even before that, we were seeing Dexter Fowler take good at bats. We were seeing Dexter Fowler hit the ball hard, and all that kind of stuff is going to eventually come together. I mean, it's what we saw out of Matt Carpenter last year, right? I mean, we saw the results were terrible, but all the data said he's hitting the ball hard. It's, this stuff's going to start falling, and it did. And now we're seeing that with Dexter Fowler this year, and it's wonderful. I mean, it really is after all he went through this last season, and then to be so open about it in the off season, to be able to then come out and show people that, hey, you can, it does get better, I guess, to some degree. It gives not only it's a baseball aspect, but a personal aspect that's pretty remarkable, and it's fun to see.
Yeah, and also I think it's quite telling that it's been a bit of a slow progression, right? We talked at the beginning, the very start to the season, wow, he looks like he's taking better at bats. The results aren't there, but he's taking better at bats. He's not striking out on pitches that were just a guaranteed strikeout last season. Then it was, well, he's walking a lot, but he's not really picking up any hits. And then it was, well, there are a couple base hits here and there, to now he's got a handful of multi-hit games in the last week, and many of those are for extra bases. So it's been a progression, and I think he would probably feel pretty vindicated in what he has continued to say, in that, you know, I didn't just forget how to play baseball in one season. There were a lot of things going on. So it's also sort of a microcosm of what it looks like when you're trying to get all these guys going at once. I mean, do what Dexter Fowler has done times 25, and that's what you're trying to manage on, or times 24, I guess. He's the 25th. You get the point. You're trying to manage that process for 25 different guys all at the same time, and it's a lot. It's a lot to try to work through, but if they can continue with the process, you know, there are definitely positive results that can and usually do follow.
You look at Colton Wong, you look at Dexter Fowler, you look at Marcell Ozuna. I think that Mike Shildt has earned this idea that he's going to run the same lineup out there and wait for these guys to come around. He's going to show confidence in them. Because so far, you know, for all the grumbling that a lot of us did over the first couple of weeks, it's like, why is he still running the same lineup? Why is Dexter out there? Why is, you know, you got to get O'Neill in there, all this kind of stuff. We're seeing that this team, the consistency seems to be really working for them. That really, they, you know, whether it's just because they're getting the reps, and we're seeing that a little bit now with Jose Martinez playing the last two or three days, where he started to hit because he's getting to play. But or if it's just the fact that they have the confidence of the manager and they know they're relaxed, whatever the case may be, this offense, well, I mean, again, Paul Goldschmidt has, what, 8 home runs, but he's not the best hitter on this team. And if you had said that, you know, before the season started, that this team would be really clicking offensively, it feels like, and Paul Goldschmidt and Matt Carpenter aren't, you know, leading the pack, I don't think anybody would have believed you.
Yeah, I'm listening to you say that, and all of a sudden I have so many thoughts. But
go right
but
ahead.
Really, it's trying to decide which one to dive into first. And I feel like at some point we're going to have to stop saying, well, you know, when Mike Matheny was the manager, but that still feels very relevant, because each of those three guys that you just mentioned, Marcell Ozuna, Dexter Fowler, Colton Wong, all three of them had very noted issues with the way things were managed in the clubhouse with Mike Matheny. And this isn't, look, I think that Mike Matheny's a really great guy. I think that he just didn't know how to manage, in particular, those three players. And I think it affected their results. So when you look at what they're doing now, this is really where I was going with that, is that we complained a lot, and maybe this is why a lot of people get concerned with the same lineup day in and day out from Mike Shildt. We complained a lot when Mike Matheny did that because of his insistence on that, regardless of the circumstance, regardless of the stakes, regardless of, I mean, there was no changing it, and it didn't seem to be the same. They could have given you the same answer, well, we believe in our guys, and it would seem to have different meaning. On Matheny's part, maybe we just thought he was being stubborn with Mike Shildt. It seems that it's because he has this rapport going with these guys, and he knows where they're at more than anyone else does, and he can make the decision about whether or not one more start or one more bullpen or one more whatever it is going to be what flips the switch. So it's interesting to me to hear a lot of those conversations or answers, I guess, from him, because a lot of it is the same kind of thing we heard from Mike Matheny, but it seems to be resonating much differently within the walls of that clubhouse, in particular for guys like Ozuna, Wong, and Fowler. The other thing I was going to say, I think it was Jeff Jones a week ago, a week and a half ago, brought up on Twitter the idea that, you know, everybody's praised Mike Shildt for the way that he's handled Colton Wong and kind of let him work into this very confident, very comfortable place where he's at, and that perhaps we should apply that same space for growth and progress to Marcell Ozuna. And wouldn't you know it, a week and a half later, we're seeing results from Ozuna as well. So Yeah, I think there's something to the idea of leaving guys in a lineup because you know what they're capable of, and because maybe they just need that little bit of space to know that their spot isn't on the line, because they're not at 100% yet. And that can, I mean, that works. That works when they start performing. It comes back to haunt you when, like the entirety of the Mike Matheny era, those things don't ever actually turn around, and you just keep saying it and keep saying it and keep saying it, but you never see the results. So for whatever reason, the same sort of methodology is paying off in a much more positive way, at least for now, for Mike Shildt.
And, you know, yeah, I think there is some, I think Mike Shildt is fortunate, maybe that's the best way to say it, that the players have turned around as quickly as they did. Because it's one thing to run out the same lineup out there 2 weeks and not really see a whole lot of, you know, tangible results. Although, again, underlying metrics and things of that nature may tell a different story to the people in the manager's seat and other places. But when you have to go a month, when you go 6 weeks, when you go 2 months, then it becomes, when is the change going to come? You know, again, I know a lot of people were saying after a week or two, you know, Dexter Fowler's got to go, stuff like that, but that's just because we're ignorant fans that don't know what we're doing. You know, I mean, some of that is. We have this impatience to us, and it's good to see Mike Shildt have a little bit a longer view. That being said, again, and I think maybe we'll use this to transition a little bit. We always thought that this kind of decision was going to come from probably the outfield, probably from Dexter Fowler, you know, maybe from Marcell Ozuna, maybe from someplace else. But it looks like this same type of decision may have to come from the pitching staff instead. Dakota Hudson had a better day today. As you said before we started, he gave up 2 and an asterisk home runs. But, you know, he still gave up, you know, three balls left the yard. He gave up 3 runs in 5 innings, and that's better than he's been doing. I mean, you look at the line that lefties have against him, and it's just like a video game. But yet he, you know, he still got the start today. Probably will get another start after this. You know, again, maybe Dakota Hudson starts to turn it around because he's getting this confidence, because he's getting these opportunities. But, you know, how long do we wait on that spot? Is that where the decision's going to come for Mike Shildt?
You know, before this start, I definitely thought it was. I think I saw more confidence, more just commitment to his pitches today, which was just severely lacking in his last couple of starts. I mean, he looked like a deer in the headlights the last start against the Brewers, as well as the first start against the Brewers, let's be real. And it looked like a completely different guy than the one who earned the starting rotation spot with what he did this spring. And, you know, it's a weird line to try to find, and I say this having never tried to find it myself, but with a pitcher who isn't executing, you know, how much of that is a physical thing, and how much of it is just lacking conviction in what you're doing? When I talked to former Cardinals pitching prospect Robbie Rowland for a podcast episode over the offseason, he mentioned that specifically in regards to guys like Ponce de Leon and Jack Flaherty and Austin Gomber, that they believe they're going to strike somebody out with every pitch. And anyone who is one of the best in this game throws every pitch with that kind of conviction. I think we've seen that from Adam Wainwright. When he doesn't pitch with that kind of aggressive, I'm going to get you out with this pitch kind of confidence, that's when he seems to struggle. So that's what I don't think there has been for Dakota Hudson. And, you know, that's not a diagnosis of his pitching mechanics and why his breaking ball isn't breaking like it did in the spring, but it's a significant part of it. And I think that's the part of it that will keep Mike Shildt running him out there when he has an outing like today, where it definitely seemed to build some of that confidence and allow him to see he's very capable of getting major league outs, and doing it consistently is just the next step of that process for him.
We saw Miles Michaelis yesterday go 8 innings, which is the first time any Cardinal pitcher had gotten an out past the 6th all year this year. The rotation in general. I mean, I don't know. I mean, we've seen some good stuff. We've seen some good outings for Michael Wacha when he wasn't facing the Dodgers. We've seen some... I don't know. Have we seen a really good outing from Jack Flaherty yet this year? I mean, we've seen some...
Not great.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just trying to think about him going over my head, but it feels like he hasn't taken that step yet. But it may come, but I don't know. I mean, it feels like something at some point in time is... And, you know, maybe that's Carlos Martinez, who's starting his rehab and starting to work his way back. Alex Reyes is on the starting track in Memphis. While that's not necessarily designed for him to be a starter, it at least gives him that option. But it feels like they're going to have to do something because, you know, the bullpen has been, for the most part, pretty remarkable this year. That's going to be difficult to keep going if they're pitching, you know, basically 4 innings a game.
Yeah, that's definitely not sustainable, even with John Gant and John Brebbia, now minus Mike Myers, which we should probably mention as well, out for at least a couple of months with a lat injury. So I realize he's not everyone's favorite reliever, but man, he could eat up some innings, and they've needed him to do that early in the season. So now you're looking at, you know, needing some of those longer appearances out of the bullpen unless some of these starters can get going. And it's fascinating to me listening to, like, pre- and post-game show and listening to the guys on the Fox Sports Midwest call and all the times that we've heard, they're going to get it going. This starting rotation is going to be a strength. They're going to be fine. They're going to get it going. They're going to turn it around. And I think it's fair to believe that to be true. I also think that having a plan in case they don't is not a bad thing. So what that plan looks like right now is a little bit fuzzy. Yeah, as you mentioned, Carlos Martinez is starting to throw, but how far away is he from being ready for any sort of game action, much less stretched out enough to be a starter? And is that, you know, then you start playing the game of, is it more valuable to have Carlos Martinez in the starting rotation, you know, in June, or is it more valuable to have Carlos Martinez in the bullpen 3 weeks from now? I don't know what the answer to that is at this point, because I think it sort of depends on the next, you know, little stretch for the rotation. But you mentioned Alex Reyes. That's an option. But every time it's brought up, Mike Schilt and company keep sort of shutting down the notion that that's why he's moved into the starting rotation in Memphis. It's more just for the regular outings and the ability to throw multiple innings to make sure that his mechanics are all as they should be. So it's an interesting situation because, yes, you expect that Jack Flaherty will settle in, and you expect that Michael Wacha can pitch well against more than just the Brewers. And you don't know what to expect from Adam Wainwright or Dakota Hudson. So there's still this far already into the season. Those are all things that we had question marks about coming into the year. I think to see Miles Michaelis look more like Miles Michaelis was a good thing, was a great thing, actually, because this rotation needs someone who can give them that depth. But there's got to be somebody else. I think I said at the start of the season a couple of times, that's why I think Jack Flaherty is so important to this team, because Michaelis can't be the only guy that you can depend on to go more than 5 innings. Not if they want to, you know, make a deep run, because their bullpen just cannot cover all of those innings night after night, especially with the huge question marks of that 4th and 5th spot in the rotation. So I'm curious what the next week looks like for the starters, because I think that will tell a very significant part of the story for Carlos Martinez, or for whatever else the Cardinals may have to try to do until the starting rotation gets it together, or whatever anyone wants to say they're going to do.
Right. Now, obviously, the bullpen is doing well, but they also has had to get into the reinforcements as well. You like you said, you met Mike Myers was down, and so they brought up Ryan Helsley this week, a guy that has done starting at Memphis, a guy that in theory could still slide in and be one of those rotation pieces as well, although they don't seem to be looking to him there, but we've seen him pitch a couple times. He got, you know, he was thrown into a very tough situation to start his career, although I don't know that I necessarily blame Mike Schilt for putting him in there. He's looked pretty well. I mean, he looks like he's got, you know, last year it was, you know, Mo talking about Jordan Hicks and Helsley and Dakota Hudson all in the same breath. And we're kind of starting to see that. I know that we've had a lot of people talk about him over the last year plus. I mean, Kyle and others that follow the minor leagues have, he's not a secret coming up, but now that, you know, some of us, the rest of us getting to see him on the big stage, it's fairly impressive. And you start dreaming about a you know, Helsley, a really good Andrew Miller, John Brebbia and Hicks at the end of games. I mean, that shortens games quite a bunch.
It really does. The injury for Ryan Helsley last year kind of took him out of that conversation for an extended period of time. But man, it's easy to see very quickly why so many people are so excited about him. And, you know, he just doesn't seem fazed by the significance or by the pressure of being that guy that comes in, whether it's to face Christian Yelich or just to eat up a couple of innings because the starter didn't go deep into the game. You know, he's certainly capable of those multi-inning appearances, but and to some degree, I mean, there's an argument to be made that he's been a starter and he's been effective as such because he actually gets better the more pitches he throws. So his effectiveness as a reliever will be something to watch. But, you know, he can touch 100 pretty easily, and he's a little bit of a different look. So it's exciting to see another power arm for the Cardinals that has made that jump from AAA to taking on big league hitters and doing it successfully, minus Christian Yelich. But, you know, that's a different story.
Yeah. I mean, that you said major league hitters, not like the league above.
Whatever's higher than that.
Yeah, because that's apparently, it was nice to see here that Christian Yelich had a couple home runs over the weekend, so that somebody else was getting beat up by him. The other thing about the bullpen that we probably should mention, and I really didn't, I wasn't sure we'd ever be talking about this, honestly. But Luke Gregerson has made two appearances now in Memphis. He's made, he's worked his way up through his rehab. So far, he's given up one run over in eight innings over the three levels. And most likely, I mean, he's running kind of low on his time. He's going to have to be activated perhaps this week. What does that do? I mean, again, as much as this team, you know, at the beginning of at the end of spring, you know, they went with talent over contracts. They went with, you know, they put Jason Shreve on waivers so they could keep John Brebbia up and things of that nature. You know, now, I mean, if you're going to squeeze Luke Gregerson onto the major league staff, and it looks like he can help, we'll have to wait and see, but right now it looks like he could help. You know, how do they do that? Is it, do they have to demote Ryan Helsley again? Or, I don't know. I mean, what does Mo do here?
Yeah, I mean, it could easily, in my mind, be Giovanni Gallegos as well that goes down. He's a guy that has gotten some big outs, pitched in some important innings because the bullpen just needed to eat some of those outs up. But I don't know that he's critical to their success right now. The flip side of that is, I don't know that Luke Gregerson is particularly helpful to this team's success right now. And I guess we're probably about to find out, but yeah, I mean, I think some of it could depend on if the Cardinals want Helsley to, you know, stay in a starting rotation, or if they want him to be on the major league staff, or what they see as far as his development continuing. I think they would be more inclined to focus on his development at this point than perhaps Giovanni Gallegos, but I don't know. I mean, he's looked pretty good in his limited opportunities as well. So those two are definitely possibilities for me. I mean, Tyler Webb is there. I don't know that he's super critical, except that if Andrew Miller can't get lefties out, maybe Tyler Webb can. So there are a couple of options. I think the real question is Luke Gregerson a better one? And I don't know how they go about finding the answer to that without, you know, putting him on the active roster and seeing what happens.
Yeah, and I think that's where you're at. I mean, you've got to put him in the major leagues and see. And I, you know, I could have easily seen before, you know, I could have seen him released in the spring if he'd been healthy and ineffective. I could have seen him released during a minor, you know, this rehab not working out, or they kept him on the DL longer. But so far, again, 7 strikeouts and 8 innings. It's against minor leaguers, so we don't know how it's going to translate. But so far, he already looks better than he did last year, so I guess there's that.
I mean, low bar, but...
Yeah, but, you know, then again, so many people have done so much better than they did last year. So
that's just, true.
You know, it's fair to give Luke Gregerson that chance as well. We'll see if it pans out. But I think that's really the thing. You're right, they do have guys, whether it's Helsley, whether it's Gallegos, whether it's Webb, that can go down to Memphis, and they can give Gregerson the shot. And if in 2 or 3 weeks, and if Gregerson's just getting blown up, then they release him, bring those other guys back up, and it's no huge harm done. Then, of course, the question then becomes, if Gregerson's effective, you know, how do these guys get back to the major leagues? But that's a story for another day. You know, you figure that part out later on. And
in the words of John Mozeliak, these things tend to work themselves out.
Yeah, I was just about to get there. Yeah, that's Mo's theory, and it, 9 times out of 10 or 99 times out of 100, that is the way that baseball works. So we'll wait and see. But I think that, yeah, we'll probably see the debut of Gregerson perhaps this week. I'm pretty sure that rehab time is getting quite to the close. Cardinals, you know, Tara, the Brewers, I don't know if you know this, the Brewers are in this division, and the Cardinals have they might see them this week, and it's going to be, you know,
it's possible.
It's going to be, I mean,
there may be some fireworks.
It's going to be, yeah, and I mean, I don't know what the Brewers are doing. It's been so long since we've seen them, so, you know. I
vaguely remember. Yeah. Who's on their roster? That Braun guy still around?
I think so. I think that guy's there. Okay. I don't know. But what is kind of remarkable, and I had to check this out to make sure, we're going to go into this series, and the Cardinals are going to have a better record percentage-wise than the Brewers. And they trail the Pirates, the team that they have swept this year in the 2 games.
Just like everyone predicted, right?
Yeah, I mean, and I think, you know, this really goes to the fact, and the Cubs now have kind of crept back to .500, and the Reds are still kind of trying to find their groove, but I think this is just the fact that this top continues to shuffle. That's what we said all year, right? This race, at least 3, could be 4, could be 5, but it's not going to get decided in, you know, early September. This was going probably all the way down to the wire.
Yeah, I don't expect there to be real separation in this division for a long time yet. I mean, there are divisions. Well, I guess Cincinnati's 5 back now. I was going to say the other divisions in baseball, 6.5, 5.5 back for the last team in the division. The top 4 teams in the NL Central are separated by 2.5 games. Yep. So it's going to be a tight one, and there are a couple of other divisions that are also going to be tight, but man, I just feel like the Pirates, interestingly enough, were the one team that I wasn't super inspired by, and who knows what they'll become over the course of a season, but they have just enough that they can put together some of those run scoring opportunities, and they do have some pitching that can keep them in games. So it's going to be a dogfight all the way through, and I am excited by that as a baseball fan. I'm a little bit terrified of that as a Cardinals fan, because you know, it just, you know, what's it going to take to separate the top team or the top 2 teams as far as the postseason is concerned, and do the Cardinals have that thing? So it's going to be fun to watch. As far as the Brewers this week, though, yeah, who would have thought that the Cardinals would be ahead of them in the standings after the two series they've played in Milwaukee. But the reality is they've played better in Miller Park than they have at other places. And mm-hmm. they've run into teams like the Dodgers who played them tougher than they play the Cardinals. So, I still don't know that there are any conclusions that can be drawn from what we've seen in the division so far, except that there's a ton of talent and a lot of very evenly matched lineups.
Yeah, this isn't. But there's an interesting little thing. I was just looking at this, and again, you can't draw a whole lot of conclusion. You can't draw any conclusion from it, but it is worth noting. The Cardinals lead the NL Central in run differential. They're plus 21, which is pretty good for the fact that you think about how many times they've gotten beat by the Brewers. The Brewers, though, are the only team in the NL Central that have given up more runs than they have allowed, than they have scored. They're minus two. And I don't know if that's a telling thing, if that's a hint of, you know, maybe a sign that they're going to struggle a little bit more than they have. But you kind of think about it, and, you know, if Christian Yelich isn't, you know, again, playing at a different level for the last couple of weeks, they would have lost at least a couple more games to the Cardinals and would be a 500 team. So it's going to be very, very interesting to see if they are able to, you know, kind of rebound, or if some of those pitching issues that we have talked about for a year plus now finally catch up with them. But I think the biggest thing for this week is just seeing how much different this series is being at Busch Stadium versus at Miller Park, because I think that's going to tell. If the Cardinals can win 2 out of 3 against the Brewers at home, I think that makes you feel a lot better about their chances against, you know, some of the top teams in this division.
Yeah, and there are, I mean, it's hard to compare it to like the Coors effect right off the top of the season, but it does kind of have that feel. I mean, the Cardinals put a lot of balls over the fence in Milwaukee too, so the ball flies a little bit differently there, and it doesn't in St. Louis. So we'll see what happens to both teams, as well as the pitching for both teams. The pitching for the Brewers is a bit of a disaster right now, and I mean, Freddie Peralta is injured. Corbin Burnes is in AAA. They don't actually know who's starting on Monday, or they didn't as of the preview I recorded a couple of hours ago. So that's a bit of a problem. Their bullpen has not been what they are used to it being, as far as a number of those guys who were so successful last year. It's a bit of a revolving door, and they have a couple of new guys in that bullpen since the Cardinals saw them like a day and a half ago. So it will be interesting to see them in or outside, I guess, of Miller Park. It will also be interesting to see how Craig Counsell kind of tries to manipulate the pitching that he does have to keep the Cardinals' bats from tearing them up like they have been the last couple of days. So it's a huge series, and again, we keep saying this, it feels weird to say that in April, mm-hmm. but they don't see the Brewers again till August. So, you know, your head-to-head opportunities to gain games on these NL Central rivals, you got to take advantage of them while you can.
Yikes. I mean, you and I will be a whole year older by the time we see them again.
It's true. It's
just strong. So, the Brewers, at least according to the Cardinal website, the Brewers are going to throw out Adrian Hauser tomorrow. If you do not know Adrian Hauser, that's because he has not made a pitch yet this year in the major leagues and has a total of 9 stuck games that he has pitched in the big leagues, 15.2 innings, 2015 and then 2018. Pitched 13 innings last year for the Brewers.
So he's going to shut him out.
Probably. I don't know, though. I mean, his career ERA is 2.87. That seems a little too good for...
It's not 14 with Jason Vargas.
Yeah, and he's righty, too. So.
So you're saying there's a chance.
I'm saying there's a chance. So, but yeah, that's going to be fun. And you're right, those bats are going well. The Cardinals need to make Busch Stadium theirs again to some degree. They have had trouble winning at home over the last couple of years. They seem to be doing that this year. You know, they swept the Dodgers at home. They've just taken 2 out of 3 from the Mets here at Busch. You know, they seem to be winning a lot more than they have been. They just need to keep it up, and I think this is a big series to do it. Then they have a day off on Thursday, and then and then they have the Reds this weekend. So has potential to be a real good week for the Cardinals. We'll find out if that is. So for Tara, I'm Daniel. We'll talk at you next time.
Hey, Cardinals fans. Thanks for listening to this week's show. If you liked what you heard, you can find us on iTunes. Just search Gateway to Baseball Heaven under podcasts and click subscribe. While you're there, feel free to give us 5 of those little gold stars or even a quick review. And tune in next time as we break down another week in baseball heaven.